Welcome to Good Times, a Locked On Heat interview show featuring conversations with people in South Florida sports, media, and entertainment. My guest this week is Alex Dono, the host of Locked On Canes, Dono Daily, and a fill-in host on local stations 790 and 560. Now, Alex has done an incredible job taking Locked On Canes and turning it into a must-listen for Miami Hurricanes fans, and it's already one of the most successful college podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. With the football season starting this weekend, I talked to Alex about how Mario Cristobal has changed the energy around the Hurricanes program, their chances to come out of the ACC, and much more. Plus, we get to his all-time Hurricanes Mount Rushmore, and then talk about some other sports, including the Heat trading for Donovan Mitchell. It's a good talk. I think you're going to enjoy it. Here it is. Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. It's BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, really excited about this. Here now with Alex Dono of Locked On Canes, as well as Dono Daily at Five Reasons Sports and a host of other things as well. Let's just jump right into it because you are joining me now after attending Heat Media Availability, not Heat Media, Hurricanes Media Availability this morning. The vibe around this program, I don't have to tell you, it's completely changed, completely flipped on its head. Can you just explain to me and the listeners how Mario Cristobal and the people in charge here have just transformed the energy around this Hurricanes program?
Well, first of all, I mean, Cristobal, he came in with a reputation and a bit of an aura. You know, I get a sense talking to Canes players, you know, the guys who were carry over from last year, which is most of the roster, that like they realized the second that he arrived in the building, it's like, okay, we know what this guy is all about. We know we're going to have to work even harder than we've been working. And, you know, anytime you have a coaching change, guys understand I need to fight to either keep my starting job or try to take someone else's starting job. So it seems like there's been a healthy competition that's been going on at multiple positions. In fact, Wes, they don't even, you know, a lot of teams at this point heading into week one have already released some kind of a depth chart to the media. Miami's not even done that yet. And I think part of the reason why they haven't released one yet is they've still got open battles at a lot of different positions, really outside of a handful. Like starting quarterback is a no-brainer with Tyler Van Dyke. I think starting tight end with Will Mallory, a few of the spots on the offensive line are set in stone. You know, probably James Williams at safety, but the defensive line, it looks really loaded. That's probably the most overall gifted position on the team right now. Super loaded defensive line. You know, wide receiver is a little bit undecided because there's been inconsistency there, and I don't think enough guys are really stepping up. So I think for that reason, Cristobal just decided, you know what, I'm not ready to put out a public depth chart just yet. I don't know how much longer that's going to carry over, but I think that's been a big thing about the vibe. The vibe has been competition, really hard work. I mean, one of the things that was revealed at the media availability today is they're not allowed to play video games at the team hotels like the night before games anymore, because I guess that was something they used to do, like, you know, probably stay up like half the night, right, playing PS5 the night before a game. Video games are banned now from the team hotel, so that's just sort of the vibe that they want to set.
That is such an interesting thing to do in 2022 in this era of athlete. Like, I don't know how many times I've heard the opposite in any sport, the NBA, the NFL, whatever. This coach was so hard on us. I was just reading something over at The Ringer yesterday about Matt LaFleur with the Packers. And one of the things that he does is allow Packers players to sleep at their own house, night before a game. And people are like, wow, the freedom, like they trust us. But Cristobal is completely going the other way, like total old school here. And it's so interesting because, you know, you read the quotes that are out there, and obviously you're at these media availabilities, I'm not, but that accountability, that spirit of competition, all that kind of stuff, you could just tell that's what he wants to do. Like, I don't know how many times I've read a quote like, yeah, too many drop passes today, too many drop catches today, like, which wasn't doing it. Oh, too many blown coverages in practice today. That's not going to cut it. He really just sort of puts it out there in front of the media, and I do think that there's something to that, right? I think that he is trying to set maybe the tone. Is that sort of the sense you're getting?
Yeah, I think he wants to create a bit of a culture shock. I think that's kind of the way. It's like, tear it down and then you can rebuild it in your own image, I think is a little bit the way that he looks at it. Because, you know, I think that, and You know, sometimes when Cristobal is talking about the way these guys used to do things versus the way he wants them to do things, he tries so hard not to take shots at like the previous coaches. Like he always says, like, I'm not trying to, you know, disrespect anybody. It's just I do things right. a different way. But I think we all got a sense that things were very lackadaisical for the last few years under Manny Diaz. Those are my words, not Mario's words, of course. But I think we all got that sense. And I think that for Cristobal, who, you know, and he's, of course, got the history at Miami, having played at Miami himself and been an assistant coach, you know, years ago. And this was back when Miami used to win national championships. So, you know, his previous time down at the U, he was accustomed to the toughest competition these guys would face are their own teammates in practice. That's the way it used to be. Like the practices were a lot more difficult than actual game days. That's not been the case for almost 20 years now at Miami. And I think Mario is realizing, hey, like, you know, we've got something down here that we can weaponize, and that's the heat and the humidity. So we need to make our practices, and they obviously have an indoor facility, but they do most of their work outside. Like they only use the indoor, I think, for certain drills, walkthroughs, okay. and if it's lightning outside. So they right. do most of their work outside in the humidity. And I think he thinks if I can like really push these guys to the brink, that, you know, game days are going to be easy because you're either at home and other teams are coming into your house and dealing with that humidity. You know, teams from the Carolinas and all over other parts of the South aren't quite used to just the way it is down in South Florida. And then even when you go on the road, you're going to be in better condition than the other teams. I think that's what he's trying to create. And I think the cool thing about it, Wes, is, and this goes back to what I started out with, is the players seem to be really embracing it. Like this wasn't a thing where new coach shows up and someone's like, man, I had a sweet deal here where I could kind of get away with, you know, being on my phone during meetings and playing video games on game. Like, no, it seems like these guys actually want to work hard because they want to get better. And then sometimes if a guy that you're like competing for a starting job with, if you see that he's working harder than you are, that's going to make you want to work harder because you want to be, you know, you want to be a starter. So I think that right. there's a lot of that going on. I hope they can sustain it because like anything, if the going gets tough and they lose a couple of games, you know, if things go really poorly against Texas A&M, you have to wonder like how they would respond to that. So hopefully they can keep everyone bought in.
Yeah. Right. Like if you're winning games, this whole accountability kind of over the top thing that Cristobal is doing. And I say over the top only because again, like you mentioned before, like playing or practicing in the immunity, making practice even harder than games. I mean, that's straight out of the Schnellenberger, Jimmy Johnson playbook, right? Like that's what they used to say with Hurricane practices, that those were all because of the recruiting that they were able to get done, because of the competition on the depth chart, and because of just the heat and humidity that you were going out there every single week with, dealing with, like those practices were harder than the games on Saturdays. And so you could see Cristobal, who is obviously a product of all that kind of stuff, trying to bring that back. And all that's awesome. It sounds great until you start losing games. And some people are like, can we go inside? I'm exhausted and I'd like to just chill out with some Call of Duty at night. And you're not letting me do any of this stuff. I do think that from a recruiting standpoint, everything that you're talking about, like if I'm a parent of a kid, you know, all that stuff sounds awesome. Because if I'm a parent of a kid that's going to college football, I know with all NIL stuff and everything that's going on, you're obviously able to make some money now, but that's not the end goal, right? Obviously, the goal is to get to the NFL, and that's where the major money comes in. And so if I'm a parent, I'm like, yeah, hold my kid accountable for a couple of years and send him to the NFL so that we can really start making some money here and have a real job and a living and a good life. Let's talk about the NIL thing a little bit, because I do think that if the Hurricanes do pop, if they start winning games over the next couple of years, I think that there will be people, probably not people in South Florida, but people in the national media and the sphere in media who talk about this, who might, I don't know, blame the NIL for that, kind of call out the Hurricanes for being like, yeah, the only reason you ever got back to prominence is because you bought your team or something like that. What do you think of Miami and how it's handled the NIL, and what's sort of the counter argument to that?
Yeah, and you're already seeing, even though they haven't even played a game yet in this new era, you're already seeing people just with the success that they've had in recruiting, people are like, oh, it's NIL this, NIL that. It's obviously, it comes with the territory. Just based on the way you asked the question, you probably agree with me that, you know, players deserve to be able to be paid. I think the way that the system used to be was absolutely ridiculous. And listen, I think in Miami's case, they show you how beneficial it can be to be in a big market with a lot of local money. Because, you know, I know that NIL is now kind of like it's a legal loophole in some ways to get money to players. I think that some of the smaller markets in college towns, you had boosters who were like really good at making like concealed payments, because you hear about a lot of that under the table stuff. And now that everything's out in the open, all of a sudden they don't have the sort of influence some of these boosters do, because people who own actual businesses and are advertising products and getting return on investment, all of a sudden big money is coming in. And you see like the markets that look like they're doing really well right now with NIL, Miami's doing very well. USC is doing very, very well over there, Southern California, and the teams in Texas. I mean, there are certainly others. I think Tennessee's doing really well also, but the teams in Texas with that oil money, I mean, Texas A&M and right. Texas, it's just flowing over there. I also think that a couple things are going to happen. And I think that people will be talking a lot less about NIL maybe a year or two from now than they are right now, because number one, it's just going to get normalized and there's going to be less of a shock around it. I also think at some point the NCAA is going to figure out a way to regulate it a little bit more and at least make it a little bit more clear kind of how the process works, because a lot of people don't really understand it, myself included. I study it and there's still a lot of things I'm like, oh, I didn't realize you weren't allowed to do this, that, and the other. So I think people will get more educated on it. And then another thing is, I think not the entire institution of it, but I think that the ridiculous amounts of money that players are supposedly getting paid, I think it's a bubble, because I think at some point these collectives and these businesses are going to realize this bidding war has reached a point where I'm not, like, if I'm spending seven figures reportedly on certain players, I'm not getting enough return on that investment. Like, we all have to dial it back. So I don't know how long it's going to take. I don't know how. Right. Well, and the other thing about LifeWallet, it's interesting. I hope Miami can do some sustained winning over the next couple of years, because I don't think they'll be able to just, and LifeWallet's not the only NIL provider to Kane Stu, but they're by far the most prominent one for Miami. I don't think they could just strictly rely on LifeWallet forever, because I think Ruiz at some point, because he's kind of created this media firestorm around himself, at some point that coverage is going to die down and he's not going to feel like he's getting return on his investment. So he's probably going to dial it back. Right. So when he dials it back, I think it's inevitable others are going to have to step forward and carry some of that load. So in the meantime, definitely, I think that anybody like a team like Miami, USC, Tennessee, if they kind of come out of sort of nowhere, come out of the shadows and like win a lot of games this season or next season, there's definitely going to be people out there who are like, oh, they're only doing it because of NIL money. Right. But most of the people who say that are probably people who wish their schools were benefiting more from it. And, and I'll answer the last part of your question as far as like how Miami's handling it. That's one of the interesting quirks about NIL is, you know, if you're doing it by the rules, and I think Miami's doing everything by the rules, you keep your hands off of it. Like it's an external thing. You know, these players, they have NIL agents, many of them managers, they're cutting these deals. Like obviously the university has to make sure everyone's compliant, but they're like, these schools are not supposed to be brokering deals. They're not getting involved with it. So they just sort of have to stand back and let it happen. And I think Miami's doing fine with that.
I do think a little bit more transparency would help. Not that I don't think it's necessarily needed, even though probably transparency is usually a good thing, but it would help people just sort of understand what's going on more than they already do, to your point. This is all new, and I think we'll probably get there eventually. But the people who are complaining about the NIL stuff, I mean, let's just face it. We know who they are, right? They're the SEC elites, right? They're the Alabama people, the Georgia people, maybe to a certain degree, the Florida Gator people who just haven't really been able to keep up, and they're kind of coming out of some good days, but also some bad days. And now the playing field is a little bit more even for, again, the Alabama, the Georgias, and you can even say guys like Notre Dame and Ohio State, everybody that's been in the college football playoff over the last half decade, they're the people that are going to be complaining. But in terms of like everybody else who's not wearing like an Alabama polo tucked into a pair of khakis, like why would you ever complain about the NIL if it's going to create more parity? If you're talking about Miami and USC and Texas being back in the mix here, like legitimately back in the mix for college, not being like, oh yeah, we're preseason ranked 16. stuff that actually matters. That's got to be good. I mean, everybody has basically already agreed that we're sick of seeing the same four or five teams in the college football playoff every year. We're doing it to the point where we're talking about expanding the college football playoff before the current contract is up. They're trying to find ways to do that. Well, the same thing, like, if you want parity, this could help get parity done. The people it does hurt are maybe the lesser schools, the mid-majors, and the teams that, like, you already saw people in the transfer portals. Like, okay, UCF, they have Dylan Gabriel. It's like, awesome. You have this great quarterback, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. He's like, deuces, I'm going to Oklahoma because it's a greater market, and I'm getting whatever NIL deal I can get there that's not necessarily available to me in Orlando because the Oklahoma alumni base is way bigger and more affluent and historically around more than the UCF one is. So I don't know. I do think that ultimately it will be a good thing, although I am fascinated to see where it goes. Because, yeah, maybe that you don't see the return on investment. On the other hand, maybe you do see the return on investment. Yeah. Like, schools are going to have to try to make it worth their while for these people to kind of donate, not donate because it's not necessarily a donation, but to pay these athletes under the NIL deal. So, anyway, that's me rambling about the NIL. And just
that's a great point. The leveling playing field thing, Wes. Yeah. I think that's really, really true because you've had, you know, the same, like you said, basically the same 5 to 6 teams who are on top every year. Now it's like, we don't want to share that spotlight with anyone else.
Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all of your betting needs. Find all of your favorite sports and events at the number one online source for odds, lines, and games. Find reviews and news of every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all of your sports wagering information. From live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts, they have you covered. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to learn more about the action happening today. It's BetOnline, where the game starts. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about some football. Can the Hurricanes win the ACC?
They can. I agree with most to say that Clemson's the favorite. I just think that they're the deepest team, and their defensive line, Clemson, it's basically an NFL defensive line that they have. Like, all those guys are going to be in the NFL. But I think Clemson, they got a question mark at quarterback. I think the last, you know, season and plus has shown us, like, you can't fully believe in DJ Uiagalelei. This is not, you know, what Trevor Lawrence used to be. So I think that makes them a little bit vulnerable. Yeah. I also think Clemson could be a little bit vulnerable because I think North Carolina State's really good, and that's in their half of the ACC in their division. So I think North Carolina State could also contend. They've got probably the best linebacker group in the ACC and good quarterbacks. As far as Miami's side of it in the Coastal, I feel like we say this every year, but they've got to win that Coastal. Like, there's no excuse not to. Right. I mean, Pittsburgh's not going to be as good as they were last year. And Miami even beat Pittsburgh head-to-head last year. North Carolina doesn't look nearly as good as they've been over the last couple of years. You know, a team like Virginia could maybe be a sleeper, and Brennan Armstrong's a good quarterback. Miami has to play Virginia Tech on the road, which is tough. But I just think the Hurricanes are better than probably anybody in the ACC outside maybe of Clemson. And that certainly goes for the Coastal Division. I mean, when you talk about Miami's defensive line, I don't think they're quite as good as Clemson's, but they're deep. Like, you know, we spoke with defensive coordinator Kevin Steele yesterday, and he said, like, basically we have 6 guys in the interior defensive line that are all, like, really good and are all going to rotate, and 7 guys on the edge. So you basically have, like, 3 full starting units at both tackle and defensive end, and that's the way it's looked in fall camp. Like, they're very deep on the defensive line. I think the offensive line is going to be better simply because of Mario Cristobal and Alex Mirabal, even though most of the same players, I think they should be better than they were last year. And Tyler Van Dyke's a really good quarterback. For my money, I'm a little bit of a homer, but I think Tyler Van Dyke is the best quarterback in the ACC. So, you know, Miami, they tend to find a way to kind of get in their own way. Like, they've done that so many times. So maybe they'll lose a game or two they're not supposed to lose. It happens seemingly every year. But they're definitely a threat to win the ACC. I think that the odds makers have it right. They've got Clemson as the favorite, and they've got Miami with the second best odds. And I think that's probably the way it's going to play out. I think you'll probably have Clemson versus Miami in the ACC championship game, which would be super interesting because if it goes that way, that'll be the second time they face each other in 3 weeks because they have a regular season game in late November.
Yeah, well, I think I'm with you. In terms of the Tyler Van Dyke point, I that's sort of the biggest driver for the Hurricanes, right? When you look at their path to winning, if that offensive line can protect them and if they can just get pressure, who knows what can happen? And that could be a recipe to beat even Clemson. Like, who knows, right? Like, yeah. you made the point with DJ. He's sort of that weak link. And maybe it's a little overstated because I know DJ had a tough year last year for Clemson, but that offensive line has gotten better and everything like that. So we'll see if he bounces back. But yeah, there's an opening, right? There's an opening, and you could talk yourself into it. And certainly winning the Coastal is the first step in that. Do you want to do CFP predictions?
Ooh, yes, I could. I'm glad it's still at 4, because if they had expanded it to 8, it'd be a lot tougher.
Right.
But it's like, I mean, Wes, it's a broken record. I think the SEC is going to get 2 in. They tend to get 2 in every single year. I'm assuming Alabama's going to be one of those. I mean, I don't know. Would it be incredibly boring to think that both – because I think Georgia still is up there. I think Alabama and Georgia are both going to get in, which works out well because they'll probably both win their sides of the right. SEC. I think Ohio State's going to get back in this year.
Yeah.
I think Ohio State, the Michigan thing was fun for them last year, but I think that was a fluke. I think Ohio State hops right back in. And then it's like, man,
those are my three locks. I think those are like everybody's three locks, right? It's obviously not impossible for that to happen, but it would be kind of crazy for those three to not get in at this point, given the talent level that they got.
Yeah. No, and then I could honestly see this being a year when the ACC doesn't get one in, because I think Clemson or Miami could win the conference, but I don't think either of them are probably going to be like 11-1, 12-1 good, or 12-0 good in the regular season. So I think I might go with another tried and true Oklahoma as my fourth, and it'll be like 2/3 of the CFPs we've seen over the years, right? Where you get Bama, Georgia, Bama's always in. And then it's usually either like Georgia or sometimes LSU in there. And then I think, and then I think Ohio State will be the third. And then I think the ACC is going to miss the party this year. I'm going to go with Oklahoma as the fourth, and Notre Dame will not be anywhere close to there this year. I think that they're going to have a little bit of a rebuild.
Yeah. So I have Oklahoma as like my dark horse, but to your point, that's what we're talking about in terms of a dark horse. Is just not at all a dark horse. Oklahoma's an awesome football team. And they have they're a legit threat to get into the college football playoff. You see people kind of messing around with Texas A&M or Utah and some of these other kind of teams, Oregon, Baylor, like these other teams that would be a little bit new to the CFP. But at the end of the day, I'm not even ready to write off Clemson, man. Like I think people kind of go too hard on the fact that they are coming off of a down year. Like that's a really good football team. So we'll see. All right, let's zoom out a little bit. You're the Hurricanes expert here on the Locked On Podcast Network. I want to ask you, I didn't tell you I was going to do this beforehand. It's a little bit of a wild card. Putting you in the spotlight here. Your all-time Miami Hurricanes football Mount Rushmore.
I could definitely do that. All right, I'm just going to, just because there's so many players that I loved, I'm going to try to just stick to one coach for the Mount Rushmore. I go Jimmy Johnson, and it's tough to go Jimmy over Howard, because I know like Howard started the party. Like, we wouldn't be talking about any championships if not for Howard. But I just feel like Jimmy, that's the guy that I identify with, because all the swagger was like that. That was a Jimmy Johnson thing. That was Jimmy's vibe. So just, I don't know. I think as an old school Canes fan, I identify most with Jimmy. So he'll take the first spot.
I love the pick. I'm with you 100%. Howard Schnell, he'll make the FAU Mount Rushmore, right? Like he'll make that one.
Yeah, he's got
Jimmy Johnson's the UM one. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I love it.
Yeah, and then man, when it comes to players, there's so many, and I'm gonna do like I choose to do this like with the people I identify with most, because I'm sure some would disagree. Ken Dorsey for me was just such a I don't know. I love. There's a number of different quarterbacks I would go with. But Dorsey is going to be the guy who gets the Mount Rushmore spot. I mean, his record as a starter was absolutely insane. Really should have had 2 national championships. Probably should have had 3, because in 2000 they got snubbed by the BCS. They should have been at least in that game against Oklahoma. So I go with Dorsey, and then I want to go with Randall Thrill Hill, because you know, very good receiver, obviously, but him running through that tunnel after scoring that touchdown in the Cotton Bowl was just so dang iconic. And then I probably go for the fourth and final spot, and I'm snubbing so many people because I'm like, man, I'm disrespecting Michael Irvin. But I think for the last spot, I go Ed Reed. And I know he was from that same era with Dorsey, but Reed was so electric. I mean, Return Man could play. And like anytime, and he seemed to pick up like two fumbles and get like two interceptions per game. And every time he got his paws on the football, he was gone. Like, it was like he scored more touchdowns than a lot of Miami's offensive players during the time he was there. So that's another guy. You could tell I'm a little bit biased in some senses towards like the early 2000s teams, but that was like when I was in high school and I was going crazy. So not easy, but I'm going to go with that as my four.
To me, I think first of all, those are my Hurricanes teams as well. You and I think are about the same age. And so, those are the teams I identify with. Ed Reed should have won the Heisman, as far as I'm concerned. Like, those are two guys. I think you have two locks on your Mount Rushmore. I think it's Jimmy Johnson and Ed Reed. Those, to me, are locks. And then those other two spots you can play around with however you want. Although Ken Dorsey was my quarterback growing up, too. Mm-hmm. So that was my guy. I love it. Devin Hester, I don't know. Like, that was another name I would maybe put on mine, but I don't know if he makes it.
Hester could have been so much more if they could have figured out how to use him. Because, like, that was one of Larry Coker's big failures was, outside of returning kicks and punts, he didn't know how to use Devin Hester.
So Coker doesn't make your Mount Rushmore.
No.
No, I don't think so. All right, let's talk about a few other sports if you're down.
Yeah,
Real quick. All right. Do you want the Heat to trade for Donovan Mitchell?
Oh, I'm hesitant. I'm very hesitant because I know how steep the asking price would be. And I feel like, I don't know, he's not enough of a two-way player for me. It's like, I don't necessarily think giving up a ton of assets for Donovan Mitchell, I don't know if it makes you that much better. I think it just makes you different and more exciting. But then, like, you solve one problem of, like, reliable scoring and offense next to Jimmy, but then you create more problems for yourself. So, it's tough. I mean, I really wanted KD, and, you know, that was a soap opera that lasted for like 6 weeks before he ends up staying in Brooklyn. But with Donovan Mitchell, and like, I don't know, I know Utah's not going to settle because they already set like records with the Rudy Gobert trade. That made them all spoiled. So I don't know. I mean, I'd hate to see him go to the Knicks, but I don't know if I want the Heat to give up the farm for him.
Yeah, I mean, two things could be true. You could, A, love Donovan Mitchell's game, and B, not think that he's worth trading your entire future for, right? Like, those two things could be true at the same time. And that's kind of where I'm at, is I really like Donovan Mitchell. I think he's a superstar, but I also think Tyler Hero's really good and can be better than what he was. And if it's Tyler Hero plus whatever salary plus all of your draft picks from now until 2029, I don't know if that's worth it, because I don't know that Donovan Mitchell makes you that much more, like, that materially better in the Eastern Conference. Like, even if you put Donovan Mitchell on the Heat right now, is that team better than Milwaukee? Is that team better than Boston?
No.
Maybe it's a toss-up at best.
Yeah, maybe.
And that's not good enough to me. That's not good enough to give up everything you got. All right, so we talked a lot about the energy around the Miami Hurricanes. There's also a big energy around the Miami Dolphins right now. This time next year, which program do you think people in South Florida are feeling more excited / better about? Hurricanes football or the Miami Dolphins?
Oh, man. I'm going to give the slight edge to the Hurricanes. And I love, for anybody who doesn't know, I know I do Locked On Canes, but I'm a huge Dolphins fan as well. I'm going to give the slight edge to the Hurricanes. Now, part of it, it's hard to judge because I sometimes think Hurricanes fans are a little bit more delusional than Dolphins fans. There's definitely delusional people in both fan bases, but so maybe the Hurricanes fans might set their bar like maybe too unreasonably high. So maybe that'll affect it. But I don't know, because I just look at the Dolphins and I think if the Hurricanes, if they win the Coastal and like compete for an ACC championship, everyone can agree that's a good season. I'm worried about the Dolphins missing the playoffs, even though I think the Dolphins are going to be better than they were last year. The AFC is just so much better. I mean, it's like they've got most of, outside of Brady and Rodgers, like the AFC is just loaded with quarterbacks. Everybody seemed to have moved over from the NFC to the AFC. You know, it would take a miracle to win your division, because Buffalo just looks like a Super Bowl contender for the third, fourth straight year. So you're trying to get a wild card spot, and then you're going to be competing with so many teams for that wild card spot. Like, you might be competing with Baltimore and Indianapolis, like this huge long, and like the entire AFC West should be in the playoffs because all right. those teams look like playoff teams. So I don't know. I feel like it's going to be the Canes because I think Dolphin fans will be and maybe should be disappointed if they don't make the playoffs. And I'm worried because I hate to say it, but I think they'll probably miss the playoffs.
9 or 10 wins in the AFC might not get you there, right?
Right.
It's that loaded. So I also think that just the way that college football works versus the NFL, like you've got this recruiting class that is being added to. So if you're a Hurricanes fan and if the right now they have the 8th best class, like Mario Cristobal obviously getting it done in Florida based on where they were recruiting wise, like you can always just sort of talk yourself into new recruits. And you're already sort of seeing that versus in the NFL where you kind of you have to wait for the draft and then you have to wait for free. Like none of that gets done beforehand, the way that recruiting is just sort of year round. But then also it really is. It's all about Tua. Like if Tua looks like a superstar and they win 10 games, then it'll be like 1972 all over again. But if he kind of looks a little shaky and the Dolphins win 10 games, then it'll be like they went 0-16, like it'll just or 0-17 in this case. But last thing. And then we'll send you off here. What's maybe the favorite? What's your favorite thing that you've consumed, maybe watched, listened to, read over the summer?
Ooh, I got to think about that for a second. I'm going to say, and yeah, I guess it's still summer now, right? I loved the final season of Better Call Saul. I really enjoyed it. You know, I was a big time Breaking Bad fan. I think I still consider that, you know, one of my two or three favorite shows of all time. Like it's up there with like Sopranos is another one for me. I used to say Game of Thrones. I didn't like the way they ended it. I am enjoying House of the Dragon though. The first two episodes have been really good, but I'm going to say the last season of Better Call Saul, because I thought it was like a really good, and I won't spoil anything. Don't worry. I thought it was a really good final episode. And it was like, at first I wasn't that satisfied with it, but then like I slept on it. I'm like, yeah, I think that was kind of perfect, like the way that they finished it. So I'm a big fan of TV shows. I don't get to binge as much as I used to because I got a 4-year-old son who's like nonstop energy. So I don't have as much binge worthy time as I used to have. But now I'm gonna go with Better Call Saul.
I loved it. I love the final season for Better Call Saul. I'm right there with you. Just the way they shot, again, no spoilers, but just the way they shot that last episode and those last few scenes was just incredible.
Yeah.
Just really makes you emotional. I thought they nailed it. I really did, as well as maybe any finale that I can recently remember, especially on the heels of how poorly Game of Thrones ended. So a big win for Better Call Saul. A big win for me here, being able to talk with you, Alex. Alex Dano, host of Locked On Canes, and you can find him and a bunch of other places. Follow him on Twitter and check out the content, because hurricane season starts this weekend. And this is it, man. College football season. We're here. Let's go. Subscribe to Locked On Hurricanes wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you so much, man.